This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. The political fighting that plagued Congress and shut down the government is finally halted, at least for the moment. Both sides are conducting postmortems. House Speaker John Boehner spoke with a local radio station.
We fought the good fight. We just didn't win.
Well, did anybody win? What is the political fallout from the battle on Capitol Hill, and what does it mean for North Carolina's members of Congress and the state of North Carolina? Rob Christensen is chief political writer for the News and Observer. Welcome back, Rob. Always good to have you.
Glad to be here.
Also with us, Michael Bitzer. Michael Bitzer is a politics and history professor and acting provost at Catawba College, and he writes a political column called The Party Line for WFAE in Charlotte, and he is with us. Hello, Michael.
Good to be here.
Michael, did anyone win?
I don't think anybody really won. Nobody came out of this government shutdown and 16, 17 days of inactivity looking anywhere positive. I think all of the polls are just showing that the American people, the great majority, anywhere from 60% to two-thirds, are just disgusted at the members of Congress, at even the president, even though he does a little bit better. Nobody came out with their hands clean in this.
What about you, Rob? What do you think? I mean, what do you make of the polls that show that most of the public, when they're asked, does put the blame on the Republicans? Do we make anything of that?
Well, certainly the Republicans came out looking worse. And what we don't know is how this all will actually play out in real life and how this plays out in elections. I think there's a couple things to look at. One is how it will play out next May when we get the Republican primaries. There are a lot of Republican primary voters that think that the Republican Congress caved in, the very conservative voters. There are a lot of primary voters are very conservative. And so, for example, Renee Elmers, the 2nd District Congresswoman who represents parts of Wake County and Harnett and some of that area in eastern North Carolina, came under a lot of pressure because even though she was very much against the president's health care program, she was at first very reluctant to vote to shut down the government. And she came under a very heavy pressure. Eventually, she did, but she got a lot of pressure from the Tea Party folks, and she eventually did vote. But she has had a lot of threats of a Republican primary opposition. Now, actually, today, one of her major threats, Jim Duncan, who is Chatham County Chairman, said he would not run against a primary. So it'd be interesting to see how that plays out. Another thing to look for: we have a big U.S. Senate race next year. Of course, we know who the Democratic candidate is going to be is Senator Kay Hagan, but we don't know who the Republican primary is going to be. So we have a establishment-type candidate in House Speaker Tom Tillis, but we have some Tea Party, evangelical-type conservatives in Mark Harris of Charlotte, the pastor from Charlotte, and in Brannon, Greg Brannon, the doctor physician from Cary. Will they be fed off some of the anger that's there from some party conservatives? And so we could see some of this anger from the Republicans feeling that they've been let down, essentially, could play out in the Republican primary. Then, and aside from that, we could see how it plays out in a general election. So one way to see we could see how this playing out is it could help Kay Hagan. If, in fact, if the polling suggests the voters are blaming Republicans more for this mess. Could it help Kay Hagan, who obviously is a Democrat? This is a very tough state for a Democratic senator to get reelected. History shows that. Could help Hagan.
Well, what about that, Michael? I mean, this pressure on Republicans in the primary to move to the right. I mean, this is kind of a consistent problem. But now the power of the Tea Party, as Rob suggested in Renee Elmer's case, caused her to really to adjust her position on all of this, on the shutdown. What's the influence of the Tea Party? What impact do you think it's going to have going forward in these general elections where there are statewide votes?
Yeah, I completely agree with everything that Rob said. If you look within the Republican Party, there is really a very clear differentiation between two distinct sides. One is the establishment Republican Party that I believe looked at this entire episode and saw their numbers of unfavorability just go through the roof to historic levels that they have never seen before. And remember, they were coming off of a 2012 presidential election where they had to basically refigure out how are we going to be more viable in an electorate where our party base is growing smaller, it's growing wider, and it's growing older. We had to, as the Republicans enunciated in a very clear study, they had to basically get themselves out to a broader audience. Conversely, they've got this very strong faction that, as Rob indicated, are very committed, very dedicated, and will show up in some of the most important elections, and that is the primary election. In one study that I've seen, Tea Party supporters account for potentially two-thirds of the entire Republican electorate. And if you look at who was supporting their push to keep the government closed and to defund Obamacare, it was conservative Republicans by a 2-to-1 margin in a Pew Research poll. They said yes, they supported the Tea Party initiative and they wanted things to be kept as they were fighting for. So if you've got Republicans who are elected that come out of very heavily Republican districts, really the key election is the primary election. And I think, if you irritate and aggravate that Tea Party faction wing in those kind of heavily drawn Republican districts, you may have a real primary challenge on your hand, and you've got to figure out how to deal with that. If this deal goes through in terms of we see another repeat of this in January into February, that's only a few months out from the May primary here in North Carolina. That could have a real influence.
But and you've made a point of this distinction between the committed, passionate members of each party and then these moderates, people kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
So obviously the passionate people show up for the primary. They have an impact on the primary race and selection of the candidate, and then they have to run statewide, and there's that big bump in the middle that's always kind of the largest column. Now lately it's been the largest, that moderate independent voter, the biggest column on the chart. So what does that mean going forward in the general election? I'll stick with you, Michael.
Yeah, for somebody like Kay Hagan, she certainly can look at not just this episode, but I think the intense antagonism that the legislative session had, and if the Republican primary nominee is indeed Tom Tillis, I think she could work a dual faction and a dual strategy to really kind of not only tie him to the negativism here in North Carolina against the General Assembly, but against the Republican Party as a whole. They're not going, Kay Hagan is not going to get any Republican votes. What we see in voter behavior is that if you self-identify as a Republican, 90 to 95% of the time, you're going to vote that party's candidate. Same thing on the Democratic side. The issue with next year's midterm election is, will the electorate skew more towards registered Republicans, as has traditionally been the case, and that's going to make it even harder for Kay Hagan, or can she get the Democratic base fired up and energized and perhaps perform a little bit better than what they have in midterm past elections?
Well, and Rob, I think in terms of firing up the Democratic base, the shutdown may have something to do with that, but what happened in the legislature may be even more important to that. What impact will this past legislative session have, do you think, on getting out the Democratic base, getting them charged up and voting?
Well, I don't think there's any question, Frank, that the intensity right now is on the Democratic side, and you could see it in any number of ways, whether it's just phone calls and emails that I get or the Moral Monday rallies. You saw that in the build up to 2010 on the Republican side and people turning out in rallies opposing Obamacare. And so right now, most of all the intensity is on the Democratic side. And so we don't know that it's going to translate at the polls, but you know, you have to believe that it will. And so and anger is a powerful force, and in politics, and sometimes it's much more powerful than the positive. And it was anger by the Republicans against Obamacare and the various initiatives coming out of the early years of the Obama administration. And now it's a negative force coming from the Democrats in opposition to what's happened in Raleigh under Republican control.
Michael?
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, if you look back at 2009, 2010, the rise of the Tea Party, it was all against the actions coming out of Washington under unified government and primarily under Barack Obama's administration. So I completely agree that, you know, if you feel threatened, you are much more likely to show up than if your party is in power. Well, we've got power. Why do we need to show up? We've already got it. Why do we have to go back to the polls again? And that's the really, in my mind, the threat thesis is really the key that energizes and mobilizes people to show up. And I think it is certainly on the Democratic side. And in particular, Kay Hagan is going to have to take that into account.
Yeah, we've been talking about the impact on voters and on the Republican Party. What about the Democratic Party in all this? I mean, just take a historic example. Ronald Reagan wins a landslide victory in 1980. The Republican Party is unified. It moves forward. The impact on the Democratic Party was to move the Democrats to the right. It became a much more conservative party. Does the Tea Party, the fact that there is all this passion on the right within the Republican Party, we're seeing what effect it's having on the party itself. How about the Democrats? Do they move to the right in order to capture some of that vote? Does it have the same impact on them that it does on Renee Elmers? Ron?
Well, there's been a polarization of both parties. There's certainly the Democrats are a much more liberal party than they used to be. Just as the Republican Party is a much more conservative party than it has been. I think it's an ongoing debate among the Democratic Party it was certainly a move to the center that enabled it under Bill Clinton to recapture and win again. But I think that's going to be an ongoing debate. I don't know that the party has really engaged in that debate here in North Carolina. I think they're still somewhat stunned that they're out of power, and I don't think they've really begun that debate. Some centrist candidates like Attorney General Roy Cooper, who has begun positioning himself to run for governor, has begun moving to his political left, even though he's sort of been a centrist for much of his career. So you see that in order to run in the Democratic primary and to be the spokesman of the party, you have to move a little bit to the political left.
Well, what do you think, Michael? I mean, this also could push the Democrats to move farther to the left and hold their ground. I mean, what does it have an impact on them?
Well, I think so, but we have to recall that, like Rob said, the parties have basically become ideologically pure. I looked back at 1972 and looked in some studies. When somebody identified as a strong Republican, only 30% of them also identified themselves as either conservative or extremely conservative. In last year's 2012 election, that number went from 30% to 75% of strong Republicans say, I am either conservative or extremely conservative. Now, Democrats have also, as Rob indicated, moved more to the left, but not as great and not as in the numbers as Republicans have done. So if you look at any sense of polarization, the differences between the two political parties, for example, in the House of Representatives, we are seeing the Republicans and Democrats, the distance between the two parties, greater than what we have seen before the Civil War. So yes, there's polarization. There's polarization among the elites. There's polarization among the masses. But what Democrats would be able to do is if they could put together something like a Roy Cooper ticket against Pat McCrory. Remember, Pat McCrory was able to pull a lot of Democratic support and a lot of unaffiliated independent support. I think by all the polls, he has lost that Democratic support, and we're playing back into a kind of system where the parties are basically polarized through their candidates, and they're not going to get the kind of crossover vote, and the battle is again going to be in the middle. And the unaffiliateds, the independents here in North Carolina, really can truly make or break a particular party's chances of victory.
You know, part of the reason for the polarization is the suggestion that a lot of folks are sitting in very safe seats and they really don't have to play to the middle. Well, let's take a look at how the shutdown in particular plays in some of the congressional races, the upcoming congressional races in North Carolina. Are those all safe seats, or are there some seats that are up for grabs and may have been affected by this, Rob?
Well, most of the seats are not up for grabs because of redistricting. They are pretty safe. But you can see in several seats, particularly, for example, the 7th District. 7th District is a very close seat. That's where Democrat Mike McIntyre held on by a very small margin in 2012. Here we could see the whole government shutdown issue could play there, because anything could affect that race. You could possibly see that. And there are other seats that are that possibly could come in play. Robert Holdings, George Holdings' seat in the 13th District is a freshman Republican, and that could be a come a swing to seat if there was a very strong Democratic year if there was a Democratic backlash, that could come into play. So there are a few seats around that if in fact there was a strong Democratic backlash, we could see a seat or two change hands. But that's not true for most seats. Because of redistricting, there was a time where in North Carolina and across the country where huge issues could have tremendous change in number of seats, but that's not true anymore because of redistricting.
What do you think, Michael?
I completely agree. I mean, looking at not just how the individual congressional candidates perform, but also look at each district's presidential performance. I mean, in a district like the first, you had Representative Butterfield on, I believe, earlier in the show. President Obama got 72% of the vote. There is nobody but a Democrat that is coming out of that district. Take, for example, Virginia Fox in the 5th Congressional District. Mitt Romney won with 60% of the vote. Interestingly, and I think all the attention is going to be on Mike McIntyre's district, Romney won his district with 60% of the vote as well. So it's just incredibly tough with the power of redrawing the lines. You basically set the district into one party's camp or the other to either protect incumbents or to potentially pick up seats like they did in the 13th, like they did in the 11th in Mark Meadows' district. But we've also got to recognize that the voters are sorting themselves. They're living in like-minded communities. Democrats typically tend to reside in urban areas. Republicans are much more in the rural areas. Suburbs are kind of the back-and-forth areas of North Carolina politics. So it's not just redistricting, but it's also the voters. Where they reside also plays a huge impact in all this as well.
Michael, I got about 30 seconds left, but going forward in statewide politics, what does this mean for Governor McCrory in terms of his relationship to the legislature, which is considered far more conservative than he would like to position himself? Does he have to act more like a centrist? Does he have to change his relationship to the legislature in this next session?
I think he needs to ask the legislature to not be as conservative as they want to be. And I think that's going to be the real test. Their seats are safe. I think in 2016, he's going to have a real battle if indeed Roy Cooper is the Democratic nominee, and that's going to be a battle for the middle as well.
Right, I want to thank you both. Michael Bitzer is a politics and history professor and acting provost at Catawba College and writes a political column for The Party Line for WFAE in Charlotte. Rob Christensen, chief political writer for The News and Observer. I want to thank both of you for being on the program.
My pleasure.
Just ahead, music for kids and adults as well. Justin Roberts joins us. Stay tuned.